Thank you, Blessing Zulu and Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, September 12, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira.
Here are our top stories this evening.
President Robert Mugabe, who is the Chancellor of the University of Zimbabwe, caps 3,274 graduates at the University of Zimbabwe, among them Deputy President Joyce Mujuru and his wife Grace.
It's looking quite clear that Grace Mugabe is now a very important player. The succession of Robert Mugabe and the ZANU-PF political matrix.
The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions says the move by the government to increase levies and taxes will hit the poor more, with companies closing shop altogether.
So far into the year, we have angled 33 complaints. And what is coming out of our complaints report is that as journalists and media people, we are missing it on the basic issues of accuracy, fairness and balance.
The Voluntary Media Council of Zimbabwe says ethical standards in news reporting are on the decline in Zimbabwe.
And the Movement for Democratic Change of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai says all is set for its 15th anniversary celebrations in Maswingo.
President Robert Mugabe, the Chancellor of the University of Zimbabwe, today capped 3,274 graduates at the University of Zimbabwe, among them Deputy President Joyce Mujuru and his wife Grace Mugabe. The two women graduated with a Doctor of Philosophy degrees. Grace Mugabe's thesis was the changing social structure of the family, the case of children's homes in Zimbabwe. No case study was cited in the official University of Zimbabwe 2014 graduation booklet. Vice President Joyce Mujuru was conferred a doctorate degree in commerce. Her thesis was a strategic explanatory entrepreneurship study of sustainable agricultural business, case studies of Mitchell and Mitchell in Mashonaland East and Dotito Irrigation Scheme in Mashonaland Central Province. Mujuru, who left Howard Institute while doing Form 2 in 1973 to join the liberation struggle, had to study from home because of her commitments as a cabinet minister. Mujuru has a master's degree in strategic management. Speaking with the media after being conferred with her doctorate, Mrs. Mujuru said she was elated to have reached the pinnacle of her studies. She said the road to the doctorate had not been easy, adding, if she could do it, then every other Zimbabwean woman could, regardless of being rich or poor. She urged women in Zimbabwe to take up further educational studies. Political analyst Pedzisai Ruhanya says he was at the University of Zimbabwe today. He spoke with Tatenda Gumbo on the significance of Mujuru and Grace Mugabe's graduation on women in Zimbabwe.
As for Vice President Naya Mujuru, if you would remember, you would know that in 1980, Naya Mujuru had very little education. But what we know is that she's a hard worker. She worked to get the first degree and everything. So I may not doubt that if he has a real PhD degree, because he is of endurance, he is of working hard, which is also reflected in a role during the liberation struggle.
Looking at this from a political standpoint in ZANU-PF itself, what does it mean for the party?
I think what I have seen is that it seems there is a wedge between the first lady and the vice president. It seems there is some competition of some sort. And this competition of some sort is coming from the other side, the first lady. I don't know what the political message they want to put across.
Some are already saying that this will play into what are so-called factions in ZANU-PF. Will that do that? And also, will it affect when it comes to December?
I don't want to read much about December. You see, the issue is that the vice president, Naya Mujuru, is the vice president of the Republic of Zimbabwe, and he is the vice president of ZANU. It will take a lot of mischief and a lot of political gerrymandering to undo this woman.
That was political analyst Pedzisai Ruhanya speaking there with reporter Tatenda Gumbo. Tatenda also spoke with political activist Blessing Vava, who applauds Amai Mjuru's well-documented work in education.
From what I've read today, both at the University of Zimbabwe and from what people are saying generally, the conferment of the degree has been received with mixed feelings among Zimbabweans. First and foremost, people are doubting if she really worked for this doctoral degree. And others are saying that maybe it's a strategy to position Grace Mugabe to in the ZANU-PF matrix of the succession.
Looking at her political ascension, will it have any bearing in regards to where she will be politically?
Well, I think it's all a strategy and a ploy to spruce the image of Mugabe and also to make somehow a very competent person by this doctoral degree. But as things are unfolding and approaching the ZANU-PF Congress, it's looking quite clear that Grace Mugabe is now a very important player in the succession of Robert Mugabe and the ZANU-PF political matrix.
That was political analyst Blessing Vava speaking there with reporter Tatenda Gumbo.
The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions is warning that most companies will be forced to close shop, throwing more people onto the streets following new tax and levies announced by Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa yesterday in his mid-term budget review. Mr. Chinamasa increased the levies on fuel and introduced a new tax on airtime and mobile phones. He admitted that the cash-strapped government, which has been struggling to pay civil servants, is struggling to raise additional revenue to finance, quote, non-discretionary expenditures. Last month, Central Bank Chief John Mangudya sounded the alarm bells when he said foreign investment in Zimbabwe more than halved in the first 6 months of the year. The Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries says capacity utilization in the manufacturing sector is expected to fall by almost 10 percentage points to around 30% in 2014. Opposition parties have also blasted Mr. Chinamasa for burdening poor Zimbabweans through the new tax measures. ZCTU Secretary General Japhet Moyo says the government's desperation will hit the workers hard.
We are deeply disappointed about this approach. In fact, I think a lot of Zimbabweans or listeners are aware that Zimbabwean workers have been going through a harsh period over some years, I think. And this is an addition to the burden already they are going through. This burden including non-payment of salaries over a period of time, job losses. In the families here, you find that you have only one person who's taking care of a big family. So these charges, in fact, are going to worsen the current situation that we are going through as workers. Government should have, I think, consulted widely before we embark on this.
But the government is saying it has no choice because there is no foreign direct investment coming into the country. Therefore, it has to be inward-looking.
The government has always relied on taxes. That's true. But what you need to do as a government first is you look at the base in which you are going to collect your tax. You grow that base. Now, for government just to concentrate on the small numbers available, tax them to death, will not sustain the operations of government in the long run. So what government are supposed to do is to put policies which are going to promote the business to grow so that they collect money from a bigger number of corporate entities, and more people employed, and then there are more people paying money into the government. They won't be able to talk about these. A lot of companies are going to close now because of these duties. There are companies that are involved in cross-border trading, and duties might cost them out of business.
That was ZCTU Secretary General Japhet Moyo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
The Voluntary Media Council of Zimbabwe says ethical standards in news reporting are on the decline, citing the increase in public complaints about lack of fairness and balance. 33 complaints were lodged with the self-regulatory body since January, marking an increase of 83% from last year. In light of the development, the Media Council is now urging editors to ensure accuracy, balance, and fairness. The body held a meeting with editors in Bulawayo yesterday as it wrapped a two-day workshop on gender and media regulation. VMCZ Advocacy Officer Faith Ntlovu tells the VOA's Ntungameli Nkomo the majority of complaints have been directed at the private press.
The state of our ethics and professionalism in Zimbabwe is not as it should be. We still have a long way to go. And as reflected from our media complaints reports, we deal with media complaints at the Voluntary Media Council of Zimbabwe. And so far into the year, we have handled 33 complaints. And what is coming out of our complaints report is that as journalists and media people, we are missing it on the basic issues of accuracy, fairness, and balance, because the complaints report reflects that most of the violations have been against Section 4 of the Media Code of Conduct, which speaks to those basic issues of fairness, accuracy, balance, and just the right of reply. So it definitely points to the need for us to go back to basics.
In terms of the complaints that you are getting, who is the most violator between the private press and the public newspapers?
It would be difficult for me to say who is the most violator, but from what is coming out of the complaints report that we have, we see that more people are coming forward to complain against the privately owned daily papers. But I would not be quick to say that then that is an indicator that these papers are the biggest violators of ethics. But definitely in terms of the people that are coming forward to complain, they're mostly complaining against the privately owned the daily newspapers.
That was a Voluntary Media Council of Zimbabwe Advocacy Officer Faith Ntlovu on the line with reporter Ntungameli Nkomo.
The Movement for Democratic Change Formation, led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, says it's all systems go as it prepares to celebrate its 15th year in existence tomorrow. The anniversary celebrations will be held at Mucheke Stadium in Maswingo. Party spokesman Douglas Monzora says Mr. Tsvangirai will be the key speaker. Among those invited to the party are non-governmental organizations and diplomats, among others. The MDC was formed in September 1999 when the Umbrella Body Union in the country, the ZCTU, came together with students and other activists to form a movement that has been trying to oust President Robert Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party from office. Muonzora speaks with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
We are at a very, very, very advanced stage. Everything is now set for the anniversary, where we are commemorating 15 years in the struggle against the dictatorship of Robert Mugabe. It will be our 14th anniversary. And we are going to be hearing keynote speakers. The keynote speaker is going to be the president of the party, President Tsvangirai, where he is going to talk mostly about the new way of thinking of the MDC. We are now thinking of the national convention after realizing that the problems of Zimbabwe have no political identity as to who they affect. And therefore, there is wisdom in everybody who is affected problem to come together and fight this dictatorship. So he will be launching that. We will also hear the update about how the Congress preparations are going. Our Secretary General, Honorable Mashakada, is going to talk about that so that we have a smooth Congress. We are also going to be discussing the conduct of the Congresses in the provinces, in the districts. We do not and we will not tolerate violence perpetrated by MDC people against their kith and kin.
Your party has been struggling. How did you manage to raise money for the celebrations?
Well, we got this funding from the donations and subscriptions by our members mostly. So we sponsored ourselves for this anniversary, and we are very, very proud of that.
That was MDCT spokesman Douglas Monzora in Harare.
A Fletcher Dulini Ncube of the MDC formation led by Professor Walsh Mengube, who died in Bulawayo yesterday, is expected to be laid to rest sometime next week. A party spokesman, Tlantla Dube, tells the Studio 7's Gibbs Dube the funeral has been delayed as one of his sons is scheduled to arrive in Zimbabwe on Monday from abroad. Dube says the MDC National Executive is set to meet tomorrow to deliberate on Dulini Ncube's death and other issues. The party is skeptical about seeking a hero status for the late former Sapu Kada, who was arrested in 2002 for allegedly killing war veteran Cain Kala. He was acquitted but lost his eye, claiming he was denied medication for diabetes while in police custody. Dube tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube the late MDC chairman of the Council of Elders died a national hero.
In our view, our heroes declare themselves during their lifetime. And Dubabu Dulini, in whatever way you look at what he did, he stood for the truth at very inconvenient times. He stood for the truth against Ian Douglas Smith's racist regime when he joined ZAPU, and he worked diligently for the liberation of his country. Dubabu Dulini also defied the conventional, he defied fear. And was part of the formation of the MDC, which challenged the almost hegemonic system in the state of Zimbabwe, in the state politics of Zimbabwe. And the MDC, to a large extent, burdened democracy and nearly managed to change things until Babu Dulini again and others rejecting the politics of the big man syndrome. He was never afraid of standing on the side of the truth. It didn't matter how inconvenient it was. And in our view, that on its own declares him as a true patriot of Zimbabwe, and therefore a hero for our liberation, a hero for our democratization time, and certainly a hero of the family of the broader Ncube community, a hero of the broader Matabeleland and Zimbabwe community.
That was spokesman Tlantla Dube of the MDC formation led by Professor Walsh Mengube, speaking there with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Bulawayo. This is Studio 7 coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on the 4930-5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, you can find us at www.studio7news.com, or you can send us text messages at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
Kariba Garikai Housing Scheme residents face eviction.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Yes, Chris, today we start with the main story of the day that is making headlines. A South African track star, Oscar Pistorius, has been found guilty of culpable homicide, but was cleared of more serious murder charges in connection with the killing of his girlfriend. Judge Thokozile Masipa delivered the long-awaited verdict today against the Olympic sprinter known as the Blade Runner, who shot and killed model River Steenkamp at his home in February 2013. The 27-year-old Pistorius showed little emotion as the judge read the verdict. Prosecutors argued Pistorius acted intentionally when he shot Steenkamp through a locked bathroom door at his Pretoria house. Pistorius said he thought he was firing at a nighttime intruder. Masipa said Pistorius did not act reasonably when he fired four shots into the toilet door, knowing someone was in the room and would likely be killed. But she said he also did not act consistently with someone who had just committed murder, noting he quickly called authorities and tried to resuscitate River. Culpable homicide or negligent killing is punishable in South Africa by up to 15 years in prison. The judge ruled Pistorius can remain free on bail until the sentencing set for October 13. Pistorius was also convicted of unlawfully firing a gun at a Johannesburg restaurant in early 2013. He was found not guilty of illegal possession of ammunition and firing a pistol out of the sunroof of a car.
The head of the World Health Organization says more and better trained medical workers are needed in West Africa to stop the growing outbreak of Ebola. Dr. Margaret Chan, speaking at a news conference in Geneva today, said the death toll from the outbreak has climbed past 2,400, with the total number of cases rising to 4,784. She said officials trying to contain Ebola are short of almost everything, including protective gear, mobile laboratories, and body bags. But she said the biggest obstacle is lack of trained healthcare workers.
And the European Union and the United States have imposed a new package of economic sanctions against Russia over its actions in Ukraine. The new EU sanctions that went into effect today target firms in Russia's energy sector, including Rosneft, Russia's largest oil company, Gazprom Neft, the oil unit of Russia's giant natural gas monopoly Gazprom, and Transneft, Russia's pipeline operator, and three large defense firms, preventing the companies from raising money in the EU market. They also target individuals, including leaders of Ukraine's pro-Russian separatists and leading Russian businessmen and politicians, including Sergei Shemezov, a close associate of Russian President Vladimir Putin, who heads the arms and technology holding Rostec, and veteran ultra-nationalist politician Vladimir Zhirinovsky.
About 46 beneficiaries of the Garikai Kariba housing scheme introduced by the government in 2005 following the infamous Operation Murambatswina or cleanup filth are facing eviction, as the local government ministry claims they owe thousands of dollars in unpaid rent arrears. Arthur Jigoriwa reports from Kariba.
The local government ministry is pushing to evict the families, saying they have failed to pay $10 rentals back dating back nearly 10 years ago when they were given the housing units. Nyasha Pondiwa says he was elated when he became a beneficiary of the scheme in 2005 after failing for years to save for a stand or a house. But now he is a bitter man and on the verge of losing his house because the government wants him to pay $785 in rental arrears. Pondiwa accuses the government for double standards.
Should have told us long back that we were going to pay, but now forcing us now to pay is inhumane, and considering the fact that we are going to pay for our kids.
Another Kariba Garikai tenant, Abigail Moda, who is vowing to stay put, claiming she bought the land from the local authority while the government provided the structure. But local government ministry official Lancelot Nyanemnga, who is based in Shinoi, says the tenants are not telling the truth, adding they were given enough time to pay for the houses. Nyanemnga says the houses were evaluated and pegged at different prices ranging from $1,800 to $2,500 depending on the level of completion when they were allocated. Nyanemnga said they will give the tenants enough time before evicting them. He says another option is for the Garikai housing scheme house owners to make payment plans with the government if they want to remain in their homes. Others are calling on the local government ministry to write off their arrears, as was done with water and electricity bills when ZANU-PF won last year's national elections. The residents say the United States dollar has been hard to come by for most of them, who are out of employment and are therefore struggling to make a living. Most beneficiaries of the Garikai housing scheme were victims of the 2005 infamous Operation Murambatswina cleanup, which left about 800,000 citizens homeless. The government embarked on the housing scheme as an effort to address the situation created by its cleanup exercise that received international criticism. The state provided land and half-completed structures, which beneficiaries were expected to finish constructing on their own. Reporting for Studio 7 in Kariba, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
Chris, today we are dedicating more time to our mailbag. We've got a lot of emails that we need to read to make sure that our listeners keep them rolling in. And our first email today is from a listener who did not want to give their name. They were commenting on the story about pensioners in Zimbabwe struggling. He says that is sheer mockery. That amount that they are getting is not even enough for a high school child to spend as pocket money, but they expect people to make ends meet. These guys are now deprived of their time to rest after years of hard work. That is brutality at its maximum height.
Nelson says income for the majority of us falls miles below the poverty data line, so it's difficult to make ends meet. Tomorrow, most pupils will fail to attend lessons due to non-payment and partial payment of school fees. Schools, boarding schools, are only accepting pupils who have fully paid up fees for this new term. He continues, we are in trouble. The real problem is cash, because I'm just seated at home. Basa hakuna, I was sent home to school, but no cash. I don't know what to say. That's what's on the ground.
Itai Chimete says, I have had no salary at work for 3 months, so how can I find money to pay school fees for my kids?
Solomon Mudzingo says, money is a big problem in our country. We just don't have any.
Joseph Chikomba says, companies are not paying salaries in my area, so fewer children are going to school unless if they want to be turned back.
Wayne Rutimu writes, I have to pay my fees in 3 parts, all because I've made arrangements with a private school to pay $150 per month, since the fee is $500.
Another parent, Fredman Maduke in Mutare Wobhouse, says, we are once again learning after 4 at MTC that all the bridging, oh, she's talking about bridging students at the MTC in Mutare, that they are being forced to start lessons after 4 p.m. And he wants Studio 7 to investigate and see what can be done to help these students.
Trimo Kachidede writes, I have not yet paid a single cent for my kids. Money is a problem in Zimbabwe. Companies are not paying as well. At the other hand, fees are going up each and every term.
We have a long letter here, Chris, from Rural Communities Empowerment Trust, which reads as, Rural Communities Empowerment Trust, we have been conducting constitution awareness in Lupane and Cholocho, focusing mainly on the Bill of Rights. What comes out clearly in the meetings regarding the rights to education is that most children of school-going age have no access to education because of a myriad of reasons, chief among them that most parents are employed, have no source of income to pay fees for their children. There are a lot of orphaned children that have no access to education, and the BIM government project falls too short of assisting all the needy children. Issues of corruption are also rampant in the selection of children. That is Vumani Ndlovu, the coordinator of Rural Communities Empowerment Trust.
We have another one, Sandy's from Kuchi, who says, I feel sorry for the jobless friends who are still hanging on home. Fees have gone up and it's hard.
And another one from Zitas says, how are you, Jonga, and blessing the captains of Real News for Zimbabwe. Keep it up. Forward ever, backwards never.
Fredman Maduke in Mutare. Oh, this one we already heard. And how about this one from Zitas, who says, no, that's another one done again.
Let's go to Mkoma Onias Sharara from Mutare in Zimbabwe. He says, I was touched by the news that the U.S. is sending its military personnel to West Africa to try and help stop the spread of Ebola. May you please send my gratitude to U.S. President Barack Obama for the good job. Where are you, African leaders? Why not channel all the money that you loot towards charity? Africa, Africa.
A Blizzard Luciabe from Binga says, how are you, Blessing, and your workmate? Thank you for letting us know about what is happening in Zimbabwe. Don't tie up. Thank you for reading my script.
This is Mkoma ID, please. She says, no ID, please. Thank you guys for giving us valid news. Can you check for us what is happening in Gweru, Ku Advantage Technologies, which is housed under Zimnat House? Ukovashandi wawe kunonga shoshene muromo. This, he says, do not give my name.
Councillor Elmond Mudenda from Binga says, how are you, good people? Thanks for the good job you are doing. Greetings to all Binga councillors and staff at Binga Rural District Council.
Chris, I think we've tried to, you know, read most of the emails. We will continue on Monday. But just before we go, a short recap of our main stories.
The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Union says the move by the government to increase levies and taxes will hit the poor more, with companies closing shop altogether.
And Vice President Joyce Mujuru and First Lady Grace Mugabe graduated today with and got PhDs in commerce and sociology.
That's all we had tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night. Handing you over to the Ndebele News Bulletin with Ntunga Milinkomo and Sitandekile Mhlanga. Good night, Zimbabwe.